The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Max Kellerman stirring the pot, not Max. Mentioning the Browns is a great potential landing spot for Aaron Rodgers if he wants to win a chip this year. Well, Cleveland has spoken. Mary Kay Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Daily reports that the Browns are not interested in trading for Aaron Rodgers. The Browns per Cabot are ecstatic that Baker Mayfield seemingly turned the corner in the second half of the 2020 season, leading the Browns to their first playoff appearance in 18 years, their first postseason victory since returning to the NFL in 99.
Translation. Aaron Rodgers ain't coming to no Cleveland.
Let's look at the numbers, Max. They're not that different. Just
no,
a higher QBR,
a
higher completion percentage, and almost double the amount of touchdowns with fewer interceptions. But yeah, man. Aaron Rodgers is a beast. Chris Canty, do you believe Rodgers wants to leave Green Bay?
No, I don't believe he wants to leave Green Bay. I don't. I thought initially when you heard the beautiful mystery commentary and then we had the leak right on the eve of the NFL
draft.
I thought this was it. Aaron Rodgers wants to get out of there. But now I'm starting to feel like Aaron Rodgers is manipulating the media and the Green Bay Packers like he manipulates coverages in the secondary.
Ooh, like
I feel
that.
Like this is more posturing and Aaron Rodgers trying to gain control of his situation in Green Bay, trying to dictate when his tenure as the Packers starting quarterback comes to an end. Because, Max, you know this, there's no more guaranteed money on that Aaron Rodgers contract. The Green Bay Packers, they're renting. They're not buying when it comes to Aaron Rodgers. So if they wanted to show a significant commitment to their quarterback, then they would have to address that contract. They wouldn't go out there last year and draft a quarterback in the first round when they could have got their quarterback some weapons in order to help him. You saw what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did with Tom Brady. They recruited him in free agency, and then they asked Tom Brady, what do you need in order to make it work? And they went out and got him everything. They brought Gronkowski out of retirement. They signed Antonio Brown. They signed Leonard Fournette. They did everything that Tom Brady asked them to do. And guess what? When Tom Brady faced off against Aaron Rodgers in the NFC Championship game, Tampa Bay Buccaneers gave them the business. And so Aaron Rodgers is looking around and saying, well, what are you going to do as an organization to take advantage of the twilight of my career? It doesn't feel like you have that kind of commitment in order for me to compete at the highest level. It feels like you're trying to replace me. And that's exactly why he's doing what he's doing right now.
Look, there are two things about this situation, and this is in flux.
Okay.
And let me tell you, like, do I think Rodgers wants to leave Green Bay? I think ideally probably he would. Maybe he's looking at San Francisco and thinking, I'm not even sure that San Francisco didn't take Trey Lance because they thought they're not dealing before the deadline. Maybe they'd like Trey Lance as part of a trade package. I don't know. I'm still not sure. So I'm sure he has more ideal situations. But here's two things I always thought about the Rodgers situation. And then I'll get to the Niners. To the Packers. One, it's always been more about business than Aaron Rodgers even realized. Because business to the employee can feel personal because they're putting a number on what they think you're worth. That feels personal. I'm not claiming, like, he might felt disrespected. He wanted input. He didn't like the fact that they drafted his replacement, all that. But give me the bag. Give me the bag, right? And they weren't coming with it.
Ah,
until recently. They came with the bag, right? Oh, we'll make him the, what did I say on TV? And then they did it like a day or two later. Make him the highest guaranteed offer in the history of football. See how it feels.
Money talks.
Personal feelings will change, right? Then they came with it. Okay. Why did they come with it? They draft Jordan Love. Now we're into year two. He's not ready. Uh-oh. If he does eventually get ready, we have to make a decision whether to pay him. This ain't working out. Meantime, Aaron Rodgers, the MVP of the league, age 37. If he's this good till he's 40, that's 4 years. We can give him some more guaranteed money and stretch it over years, and we'll be all right with the salary cap. So that's one. It's always been more about business than I think Rodgers has realized. Number two, Aaron Rodgers does not have to sit out to force a trade to exactly where he wants to go. Because I don't think in the NFL, you can take a quarterback who kind of don't want to be there. Yeah, he'll show up. He'll go through the motions. He'll be really good. But can he lead a team to the promised land if he's got 1 foot out the door? I don't think so. And I think the teams are very aware of that. Tom Brady and the Bucs won partly because Brady was all all in. Not just because Brady on Sundays could do X, Y, and Z, because he led the franchise, right? They need Aaron Rodgers to do that. If he doesn't want to be there, he can't do that. They know it. That means they will trade him without sitting out. And they will trade him to the team he orders them to trade him to, because that's the only team that's going to give up the farm to get him. Because they know, okay, he wants to be here. So those are the two misconceptions, I think. One, it's not about business, more than Rodgers realizes. Two, he's going to have to sit out. Is he willing to? I don't think he has to in order to force a trade. But now that the team is looking at Jordan Love different, Chris, I think, and that they saw the season Rodgers just had and looked at his age and looked at the rules changes around the quarterback and see what Brady's doing at 43. You know, Rodgers doesn't have to play till he's 43, 40, 41. Here's the largest guarantee in the history of football for a quarterback. Yep. There it is. Why don't you stay? I think Rodgers has a good chance he takes it.
Here's the thing, Max. To be determined when it comes to Jordan Love, we just don't know. We don't have enough information. There aren't any data points that are out there, right? So we don't know. And last year, there wasn't any training camp, modified training camp, no OTAs, no mini camp. So we don't know what Jordan Love is capable of doing. But to your point about quarterbacks, you can't have your quarterback being on the fence as to whether he wants to be committed to that team, to that organization in that given season. You just can't. So with the Green Bay Packers, as we move closer to training camp, I think the picture is going to become a lot clearer in terms of what they're going to have to do. But I think also Aaron Rodgers is also going to have to declare what it is that he wants to do, whether it is that, whether he's going to go back or whether he's truly going to hold out. I don't think he's going to hold out. I think this is more about being able to needle the general manager who needled him last year when he decided to draft Jordan Love. I think it has gotten to a point where it's personal, and I think Rodgers is trying to show that he
Excuse me, one second, real quick, because I wanted to ask you this earlier, and I know we got to move on. But what made you change your mind? Because I was with you. I thought as a foregone conclusion he was out, and now I feel like he might be sticking around.
Well, because he hadn't talked about anything. He hadn't said anything. And we saw Russell Wilson with that interview he did with Dan Patrick earlier this year. Yeah. And Russell Wilson was saying, well, yeah, I think the organization should do more. I think they should support me. And Russell Wilson's agent went as far as to name four or five teams that he would potentially go to. But since then, all of that stuff has kind of walked back.
Got it.
It feels like the more time
Super quick, I think Chris hit it on the head. The end of Rodgers Packers run was being dictated by the team.
Yes.
Now it's being dictated by Rodgers. They're going to have to come hat in hand. We're sorry. You get input. Here's the money. You go out on your own terms.
All right.
It wasn't going that way until he did this.
We'll leave it there. I got another one for you. Over the weekend, Juju Smith-Schuster shared these thoughts with Pro Football Talk. Quote, the AFC North is just probably the hardest division right now to win in. Guys like Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, and Ben, I think every team is getting to the point where it's like, man, they're really good. It is what it is. Chris, is the AFC North, you played in it, the best division in football?
No, it's not the best division in football. I don't think it's a top three division in football right now. I think the best division in football is the AFC East. And I know it seems funny to say that because Tom Brady left that division a year ago. And we're talking about the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Patriots.
He never had to play a good quarterback his whole career.
That was a foregone conclusion every year. Pats win the AFC East, no brainer.
100%. But this year it's different because you're talking about the Buffalo Bills with a bona fide MVP candidate in Josh Allen, a team that played in the AFC Championship game a year ago. You have the Miami Dolphins, who were a double-digit win team from a year ago. They were knocking on the playoffs. They had their rookie quarterback, who was coming off of hip surgery, by the way, start the majority of the games, and the team had a winning record in those starts. And then you see what Bill Belichick did in free agency in the NFL draft. He went out and spent a bunch of money, and he was able to get a quarterback in round one. So I just feel like all of those teams, the way that they're trending, how they're positioned when you look at their personnel, the AFC East is going to be the toughest division in football this year.
I think it's an
interesting pick.
It's an interesting pick, but I don't think the Jets are there yet. And same thing with Joe Burrow. He's a good quarterback. I don't think the Bengals are there yet. It's not the North, AFC North. It's not the AFC East for that reason. Although I think Miami has a decent chance to get Aaron Rodgers, and then we could talk about it again. Mm. Guys, it's the boring answer, but it's one that's been true in recent years. It's the NFC West. Mm. It's the NFC West. Don't let this whole Russell Wilson smokescreen fool you. These dudes won 12 games last year. Like, Seattle's really good, and Russell Wilson's really good. And if their defense gets better, it's a problem. That's one. Number two, the Rams just got Matthew Stafford. They went to a Super Bowl with Jared Goff. You know how much better Matthew Stafford is than Jared Goff? They gave up two firsts and, what, a third in that trade? That's how much better Stafford is than Goff. Yeah. And they went to the Super Bowl with Goff, right? That's two. Let's talk about the rest of the division. When was the last time the San Francisco 49ers were in the Super Bowl? Last time Jimmy G was healthy. And they just, that's not good enough. They got an even better quarterback in the draft. Seattle, San Francisco, L.A., they're all recently in the Super Bowl. And you could argue they all got better. You could argue it at least. So that leaves Arizona out. How's Arizona looking right now? With Kyler Murray in year three, did he develop in year two? Yes, he did. Was he excellent in year one? Yeah, started right away. Year two, better. Year three? Look at what they, with DeAndre Hopkins. By the way, J.J. Watt still got football left in him. Chris, you know as an excellent defensive player, injury took their toll. But when you were on the field with Big Blue, you were still contributing. J.J. Watt, like, Arizona's trending in the right direction. You know, the NFC West is a beast.
You know what this tells me? We're talking about four divisions where normally we just say the NFC West for sure is how much parity there is in the NFL. And I absolutely love it. Every year, it's up for grabs. So cliche, any given Sunday, but it's so true this year more than any. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LeBron and Dennis Schroeder still sidelined, the Lakers are seeded seventh in the West. No team seeded seventh or eighth has ever won a title since seeding began back in 84, fellas. The Lakers' 38-30 record is also identical to who, you ask? Oh, that would be to the New York Knickerbockers. There's my camera. Chris, are you more confident in the Lakers? I can't believe I'm asking this. Are you more confident in the defending champion Lakers, Big Perks back, or the Knicks right now?
Well, Molly, it depends on what we're talking about. If you're more confident in the Lakers being able to realize their expectations versus the expectations we have for the Knicks right now, I got to go with the Knicks. I do. I just don't know if you can depend on the health of the Los Angeles Lakers. And it hurts me to say that because I'm a Lakers fan. But we don't know what we're going to get from LeBron. He came back last week and you saw that ankle was still bothering him. He's missing more time now. We don't know whether he's going to come back for the Knicks game or the Rockets game. We don't know what kind of LeBron James we're going to end up seeing. When it comes to Anthony Davis, you like what you saw last night against the Phoenix Suns. You like what you saw on Friday against the Trailblazers. But do we know we're going to see that same Anthony Davis given the health concerns that he's had missing 30 games this year? I don't know. And so I have to be able to lean on what I've seen from the New York Knicks. I know what I'm going to get from them. I know what Julius Randle's going to do. He's a guy that I think should be getting more MVP buzz. But I know this Knicks team is going to play really good defense. They're going to give the requisite effort and energy. That's going to happen every single game. And if they're matched up against the Hawks in a 4-5 game in the first round of the playoffs, yeah, I feel good about the Knicks' chances in that series. So, yeah, I'm going to say I trust the New York Knicks more than the Lakers. Can't believe I'm saying
this. This is a great question because it really depends on how you define it. Look, I'm more confident that I know the outcome for the Knicks than I know the outcome for the Lakers. But I can't say I'm more confident in the Knicks. I'm more confident in the Lakers. The Knicks have a better chance to get out of the first round than the Lakers if the Lakers wind up seeing the Clippers in the first round. Knicks have a better chance to beat the Hawks, I think, at this point, than the Lakers have to beat the Clippers. But I can guarantee you this. The Knicks' ceiling is the second round. They will not get out of the second round. Not possible. The Lakers can mess around and defend their championship this year. That ceiling is infinitely higher. They can go all the way. It's possible. So who am I more confident in? The team with a higher upside. Because even if you favor the Clippers or the Suns or the Jazz against the Lakers in that first round, no one's going to sit here and say, Lakers got no shot. No, the Lakers got a shot against anyone if AD and LeBron are healthy. Know why that has never happened with the seeding ever and everything? Because it hasn't been that Magic and Kareem both got healthy at the very end of the season, or Kobe and Shaq both got healthy at the very end of the season. But that's what could happen right now for the Lakers, and if it does, they can mess around and win the whole thing. We already know what the Knicks are going to do. Second round at best.
And Perk, let's not forget Kawhi's a little banged up right now too, according to Kawhi.
Yeah, and this is a hard one, but I want to say this. We have to quit disrespecting the Atlanta Hawks. All right, they're well coached, and they got a lot of great talent over there. And John Collins, Trae Young, you know, all the talent around Gallinari, Lou Will, you know, they got some hoopers over there, so they're balling. I'm going to say that. But I have to go with the Lakers. Why? Because when it matters the most, I haven't seen Julius Randle. I haven't seen R.J. Barrett. I haven't seen Quickly. I haven't seen them in the playoffs to know what they're going to do when it matters the most. I know what's going to happen when LeBron James and Anthony Davis get to the postseason. And even with 100% Anthony Davis and the 75% LeBron James, the Lakers run are deeper than the Mississippi River. They could have a deep run to the playoffs just because of those two. And Anthony Davis is just that special that he could help carry the load through a first round and a second round to help LeBron James continue to get even more healthier, right? But I look at the Western Conference, and it's starting to concern me. The Clippers, like you just said, Molly, they're not playing the basketball that I thought they would be playing right now.
Yeah, Phoenix.
Yeah, I look at the Phoenix Suns right now. They're not playing the level of basketball that I thought they should be playing at right now. The only team that the Lakers need to stay away from the first two rounds is the Utah Jazz, because the Utah Jazz are serious in the Western Conference, especially at home. They don't lose in Utah, and it looks like they're going to hold the number one seed. So a lot of credit to the New York Knicks. I'm not saying that they can't win a series, and I'm not saying I don't have confidence in them, but I got to roll with LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and the Los Angeles Lakers on this one.
Chris, is there a chance that the Knicks can get to the conference finals?
No, they got no shot at being able to do that. But just so I'm clear about my position, my concern with the Lakers doesn't have anything to do with their ability. My concern with the Lakers is whether or not they're going to be healthy. What version of LeBron James are you going to get? What version of Dennis Schroeder are you going to get? Can Anthony Davis continue to be the guy we've seen over the last couple of games? That's my biggest concern. And so we're saying that all of these teams in the Western Conference, including the Lakers, aren't playing the way that we thought they'd be playing this time of year. I look at the New York Knicks and I'm saying they're playing better than anybody gave them credit for that they could be playing this time of year. They just beat the Los Angeles Clippers, the third team in the Western Conference. So when it comes to the confidence level, I'm just saying I feel like you can hang your hat on what the Knicks will be, even though their ceiling when they're healthy is lower than the Lakers Los Angeles Lakers.
The Lakers just took care of Denver and Phoenix because AD showed up in a big way. But, Perk, you said something that is on the money, I think, for the Lakers, a big question mark. You touched on it. The bottom line is Rondo's not on the Lakers anymore. One thing about Rondo is whatever he played like in the regular season, you knew in the playoffs he's an all-star.
Yep.
Schroeder has to show he can do that in the playoffs. He has to show he can be an all-star guy in the playoffs, because that's what the Lakers had last year on the low, was a big three. They had a big three because of playoff Rondo. Do they still have that?
Yeah, but it wasn't on the low, Max. It was on the high. Rondo stood out. There wasn't nothing on the low that was on the high. And you have a valid point. Here's the thing. I'm just concerned about the Western Conference. And when I look at what L.A. did to Denver, right, holding them to just 89 points without a LeBron James, like they're hanging their hats on the defensive end. This is why I say, and why we had this debate earlier in the segment, the start of the show, is why I say Anthony Davis, when healthy, is the best big in the game. It's because of his impact on the defensive end. He clearly outplayed Joker in that game. Don't look at the numbers. Look at the impact. Tell me what your eye test tell you, right? So right. I'm looking at the New York Knicks, and they could possibly get past the first round. But I got to roll with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, even
Fair
if
enough.
LeBron
we gotta
James.
We got to leave it there. Big Perk, I'll just leave you with this. I want you to know that you're debating two New Yorkers that are both Lakers fans.
So, the
bandwagon's full, everybody.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Steph Curry with the shot. Can we talk about it? On Saturday, Steph Curry dropped 49 points in 29 minutes in a 136-97 win over the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here's what his coach, Steve Kerr, had to say about Steph for MVP in his postgame presser. Listen up.
Definitely the MVP in my book, and we'll see what happens. I think these last few weeks have to have at least vaulted him up in the order, but we'll see if he can climb to first or not. It'd be great to see it happen.
Perk is back. According to Caesar Sportsbook, both the Joker and Embiid have better odds than Steph to be named this season's MVP. And they're both ahead of AD as best big man, according to Max Kellerman earlier in the show.
Didn't
Max,
say that, but nice try. Go ahead.
I just said
we don't know.
Oh.
We don't know if AD is still the best.
Oh, got it. But those were the two guys you thought that were ahead, right?
Those are the two guys he has to prove it again.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they're ahead of him. He just has to prove it.
Oh, got it. I wasn't trying to misquote you. We'll stay focused. Max, is Steph a top three MVP candidate?
Yes, absolutely he is. He has played himself there. Now, look, a lot of this season, you know, early on, I was saying it's Embiid. It's Embiid. He's better than everybody. LeBron was playing real. Embiid is the MVP. He missed too many games, guys. When he missed a couple, he was four or five games behind us, six, seven games. Oh, they're still in first. If you're playing 20 games fewer than another dude or 15, 20 games, don't tell me that you're that much better that you're the MVP. So even if it's game for game, it's not Embiid. Game for game, you could argue Harden, too, the level he was playing at with the Nets. Come on, he's missed most of the season at this point, right? So we really got to deal with guys who've been there. If we're talking about the regular season MVP, Jokic is the clear-cut choice. Jokic is the MVP. He's not the best player game for game. He's close enough, and he hasn't missed games. Steph Curry at this point is probably second. Like, the boring answer is also that Giannis is doing what he always does. It was good enough to win two consecutive MVP awards. He should be in the top three. But they ain't going to give it to Giannis. It's Giannis fatigue. Even I have it, right? Steph is doing more or less what he did his MVP season when they won 73 games and he set the world on fire. He's doing that again. Other than Jokic, no one has been better and more present. If you look at this roster for the Warriors, guys, I did not think they were going to be good. I didn't think they had enough shooting. You have the greatest shooter of all time and no other shooters on the team. They're better than 500 in a very tough conference because they have a top three MVP. His name is Steph Curry. Lillard has tailed off a little bit. He's carried a big load so far. Steph is top three.
Well, Max, I respectfully disagree. And here's why. I'm not taking anything from Steph. Steph has been must-see TV. He has been on another level. But here's the problem one I have when it comes down to the MVP conversation, okay? The goalpost continues to move, all right? And when we talk about the MVP, we talk about where's your team right now? Like, we're looking at the top-ranking teams, the one, the two, the three seed in each conference, the best team in the NBA, et cetera, et cetera. The Warriors are sitting at number eight. okay? And I get it, right? They don't, everyone in the world says, including myself, he don't have the great supporting cast, and I get that part, but they're still sitting at the 8th seed, Max. They're only 2 games above 500. There's no way he could be a top 3 MVP candidate. I have him as a top 5. I strongly believe he should be in the conversation, but he's not ahead of Jokic. He's not ahead of Embiid. He's not ahead of Giannis, and he's not ahead of CP3. Chris Paul, man, I'm just like, it's mind-boggling to me that we just don't respect what CP3 brings to the game, okay? And we go back to when he won it, I think in 2005 or 2006, when Kobe Bryant was averaging 35 points, playing with Kwame Brown and a whole lot of others and carrying that team and had them really a little bit above. I think they might have been the 8th seed at the time. It's the same scenario. Steve Nash won. His numbers were not better, but his impact on the team and what his team was at the time, they were one of the best teams in the league, is why he won the MVP. Now, I will say this. Steph Curry is up there as the MVP, one of the most dominant players in the game today. Yes, he's top three at that category, but I can't give him top three MVP, Max, just because they're sitting at the 8th spot.
Yeah, Perk, I'm with you on both points you made as far as Chris Paul not getting more conversation for MVP and, of course, winning having to factor into the conversation when we start talking about the most valuable player award. I mean, you can talk about Steph Curry being able to be one of those guys that has a chance to lead the league in scoring, one of the oldest players to lead the league in scoring since Michael Jordan last did it. But you got to also look at what Joel Embiid is doing and what Jokic is doing. Embiid, I understand he missed the 19 games, but he's third in points per game. He's second in usage percentage, and he's top 5 in defensive rating. And, oh, by the way, his team is in the tops in his conference. You got to give respect to that, even if it's the Eastern Conference, yeah, which is the weaker of the two conferences. As far as Jokic goes, I mean, you're seeing what he's doing even without Jamal Murray. His team is 6-3, and they're going to finish with a top 4 seed in the Western Conference. He's leading them in points, rebounds, and assists. So I think you have to give respect to what both of those guys are doing. I think Steph Curry is a top 5, top 6 guy in the MVP conversation. I think Lillard is in there, Giannis is in there, and Luke is in there. I don't know what order those guys would be in. Steph is in that mix. But I can't give Steph the nod over Joel Embiid and Jokic. I just can't.
Look, well, Joel Embiid's just missed a bunch of games. That's the only reason I have him there. But let me just say something about this most valuable player. First of all, Perk, because they made a mistake giving Nash the MVP way back when, they should do it again? No, I'm sorry. They got it wrong back then. But it's okay to say they got it wrong, and we evolve. We don't have to get it wrong again. Chris Paul's having a fantastic year. If Steph was on that team, they'd be even better. I don't think Chris Paul could do with the Warriors what Steph's doing. And here's the big misconception about, well, if you're the MVP, you have to win.
Yep.
Most valuable and best are synonyms. I don't care what anyone says. It's just be rational about this. Most valuable, best, the guy who contributes the most to winning. Now, if your teammates aren't good enough, right, you may not win enough. That doesn't mean that you didn't contribute the most toward a win. You just didn't get all the way there because your teammates weren't good enough. There's already an award for having the best teammates. It's calling being, you know, number one seed, number 2 seed, making a playoff run. That's the award. We're trying to say who's the most valuable.
Yeah, but in reality, it's not going to happen because of their record.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Over the weekend, Russell Westbrook logged his 181st triple-double, tying Oscar Robertson records. He's been on a tear in his first season as a Wizard, registering his 35th triple-double this season. Tonight, Russ can pass Oscar when the Wizards play the Hawks. Chris, coming to you here first, is Russell Westbrook more overrated or underrated?
Molly, I love Russell Westbrook. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that he's a top competitor. And as a football guy, I can appreciate the level of physicality that he brings to today's NBA game. He's probably pound for pound the toughest guy in the NBA. But all that being said, yeah, Russell Westbrook is overrated. And the reason why he's overrated is because the stats that he has doesn't tell the entire story in terms of his overall impact on winning. For a guy that gives you a lot of triple-doubles, he doesn't have success at the highest level. You look at the last four postseasons, Russell Westbrook, first-round exit, first-round exit, first-round exit, second-round exit. Now, I understand it's a team effort, but when you start talking about a guy that can average a triple-double, you would expect that he would be able to step up and be able to help his team have more success once it really matters. And Russell Westbrook has been lacking in that department for his entire career. Now, I love what he's doing with the Wizards, especially in the second half. And when he gets a triple-double, this team is 21-14. But I can't sit here and say that Russell Westbrook is one of those guys that is not overrated just based on what everybody gives him these accolades in terms of him being able to average a triple-double. I think everybody's enamored with the fact that he can do that. First player to do that since Oscar Robertson. But in terms of his overall impact on winning when it matters, yeah, he's overrated.
We go. You want me now?
Yeah.
You ready for this? Okay. Russell Westbrook is both the most overrated and the most underrated player in that.
Come on.
Could you be any more annoying with that answer?
He's both, and I'll explain why. There are a group of people. There's a basketball fans are split right down the middle, and most of them both have it wrong, mostly. Mm. One group says Russell Westbrook's top 3-point guard of all time. Who could it? Oscar Robertson averaged a triple-double one time. Russell Westbrook did it for 4 consecutive seasons. He's an other than Magic. We've heard this said. They believe greatest. No, he's not. And there are other people who don't understand. He is an MVP caliber player still. Oh, Russell Westbrook's overrated. You can't win with Westbrook. He doesn't affect winning. It's empty calorie stats. They're wrong, too. Let me tell you what's happening with Russell Westbrook right now. One, the crowd that overrates him. Steph Curry and James Harden are better than Russell Westbrook, period. They're better players. Everyone would take them before they took Russell Westbrook. So of the kind of point guard size players, he's at best number 3. People would also argue Chris Paul. Some might argue Kyrie Irving or Damian Lillard. And if you include LeBron James and Luka Doncic as guys who, primary ball handlers, whether or not they're technically backcourt, but whatever, Russell Westbrook's lower and lower on the list. Okay? So that's how he's overrated. But let me tell you why he's underrated. Last 3 seasons, Westbrook has been in new situations. Paul George is a new teammate. So he's trying to figure out how to play with Paul George. Paul George got to be the leading scorer. He's figuring it out. Had a great season by the end of the year. Westbrook did. Then he's in a new situation in Houston. How am I going to play with Chris Paul? With James Harden. So in the beginning of the season, it looks like he fell off. By the end of the season, what are we all saying? Westbrook's an MVP candidate. Happened again this year. New situation. Bradley Beal. They're losing. He's putting up numbers, but they're not winning.
I'm never going to come back.
What happened by the end of the season?
This is why I'm getting more gray hair every single day, and I hope Stephen A. is watching. Hopefully he's not because he's on vacation, but I'm going to make sure to bring this back. It's not to the people out there. It's to you. So to you, he's both overrated and underrated. You're telling me to the masses. I want to know what Max Kellerman thinks.
It's not to you because to you means your own rating. How can you over or underrate someone? Overrated or underrated is a perception of the masses. And what I'm saying is you can't take an average here.
What is he to Max Kellerman?
Is he overrated or underrated?
Yes, answer the question.
Where is
Max
he rated?
Kellerman.
Tell me, and I'll tell you if he's over or underrated.
Is he overrated in your opinion, or is he underrated?
He is overrated by half the basketball fans and underrated by the other half, badly. So how can you say? Right. Tell me where you rank him. I'll tell you if you're over or underrating him. Where do you rank Russell Westbrook? Is he an MVP caliber player?
I'm being told by producers to move on because they're very annoyed by this as well. So I'm going to listen. And I'm going to celebrate the Knicks right now, the team that you abandoned, because they are back 13-3
on my neck today
with the perfect record. It's not true. That was the most annoying argument of all time since April 9th. Derrick Rose. Let's hear from him. Bye, Max.
I saw they had a young group, and it was great for me to go there. Get some of that young blood, get some of that young energy, and we're trying to build the culture here. Tibbs is doing, and his staff is doing a great job of making sure they're preparing us before every game. In the fourth quarter, the intensity pick up, the urgency has to be there, and we're trying to play for something.
Max.
Yeah.
Tibbs has to be coach of the year, right?
He is.
Yeah.
Tibbs is coach of the year. And you can point to whoever else you want. Tom Thibodeau took over a team. Even Julius Randle, who's top five MVP maybe, even he credited Thibodeau with the culture that held him accountable, that held everyone accountable to get him and the team to the next level. I can't believe I'm saying this. I never thought of Tibbs as a head coach, as a coach of the year type guy. But this Knicks team, when you go back to the preseason, how you evaluated the roster, this is one of those, if every single thing works out better than you think it could work out, here's what you get. A lot of that's coaching. This is a team that's totally connected on offense and on defense. And you know how I'm sitting here, Chris, talking about, we know what the ceiling is for this team. Mm-hmm. They can win the first round. They're out in the second. They don't believe that. They don't think that. They don't believe that. Tom Thibodeau is clearly the coach of the year.
No, Max, you're wrong about that. And I love what Tibbs is doing with the Knicks. But Monty Williams is the coach of the year. You got to give him some love. Let's first start with the facts, okay? They're second in the Western Conference. They were a team that missed the playoffs last year. Even though they played well in the bubble, they missed the playoffs last year. They added Chris Paul to this team, and Monty Williams has been able to orchestrate all of it. You see this team playing at a high level, and it's a team that's ahead of where we'd expect them to be in terms of their program building. Through the month of April, this team has the best record in the NBA of teams against teams that are over 500. So you have to give them some love for that.
And that's also impressive, because with the Knicks, it wasn't that, because I gave the same record, yeah. But with the Suns, yeah.
Exactly. And then you also got to give the love the fact that they're one of two teams that have a top 10 offensive rating and a top 10 defensive rating. So in terms of the coach being able to put all the different pieces together and then seeing the development of the young players on the Suns, guys like DeAndre Ayton, like Cam Johnson, like Mikal Bridges, that speaks directly to the job that the head coach is doing. And I got to say, the fact that he is second in the Western Conference, which is the tougher of the two conferences, that's what
makes the Suns are going to be good this year.
That's what makes Monty Williams coach
this
the
good?
Year.
Yes, I thought there was a chance. I thought they
There's
were going to.
There's no way you thought hold the on, Suns hold on. Would be a the top two team in the West.
It's not whether or not they're going to be top two. There are five teams bunched pretty close together. The Suns were one of them. This is not surprising to me, because if you told me just before the season, I don't care who coached the team, here's your roster, Chris Paul and Devin Booker in the backcourt, huh, that's kind of perfect. Who are your 3-and-D guys? Who are your forwards? Bridges and Cam Johnson. Oh, yeah, that's kind of perfect. They don't need the ball. They can defend and they can shoot. Who's your big? DeAndre Ayton. Wow, he was number one overall, and Chris Paul's there to influence him. How about who's coming off the – well, we're going to pick up Jay Crowder. We'll pick up Saric, guys like this. Yeah, I would expect that team to perform very well. If you showed me this Knicks roster preseason – get out of here with that. A four seed in the East? Hell no.
No, I hear what you're saying, Max, and I hear where you're coming from, but I don't think anybody thought the Phoenix Suns would be capable of what they're doing this year. I don't think anybody thought it. The roster can look great, and you can say, based on what they did in the bubble, this is going to be a team to watch, but nobody had the Phoenix Suns being in this position. The roster can look all great. No. But it's a matter of
really, no one had either team.
A lot of people like the Suns a lot. If LeBron and AD don't get hurt, the Suns aren't number one in the West right now.
That song that's now stuck in my head. He's a runner. He's a track star. You know what it is. Seattle Seahawks wide receiver DK Metcalf made his professional track debut on Sunday. Get it! At the USA Track and Field Golden Games and Distance Open, Metcalf ran a 110.37 seconds, finishing last in his heat, 15th out of 17th overall. I will start with the athlete on the show, Max. Just kidding.
Wow.
I'm kidding. Super Bowl ring. Kidding. I wanted everyone to get a laugh, and look, it worked. What are your thoughts on Metcalf's performance as a football player who played at the highest level, and he just did that?
Molly, that was a lot more competitive than I thought it would be, because you're talking about guys that have world-class speed and guys that are a lot smaller than DK Metcalf. I mean, it looked like I was out there running with my brother's kids in terms of the sheer size between DK and then the rest of the guys that were out there sprinting. But, I mean, I was impressed to see that he actually did it. And then beyond that, just to have the courage to go out there and put it on the line. Like, I thought that was an impressive performance. Clearly, he's not in that class with those guys, but just the fact that he was out there and he was doing that, that was a win.
He is in the class with those guys. He did not finish dead last overall, and he is not a track star. That's amazing to me, and that's the very beginning. Who knows if he can improve on that? This is something I'll say, and track and field people get mad at me when I say this, but there's a hierarchy in sports, and the best athletes in the world are in the NFL and the NBA because there's a financial incentive to be there. Right? So if you are just fast, you can wind up a track star. But to do what DK Metcalf does, you have to be almost as fast as the fastest people in the world and be able to think on your feet, adjust, have hand-eye coordination, agility, toughness, physical strength. There's that plus more. And the fact that Metcalf is almost as fast, is not dead last among the fastest people in the world, is bananas.
Not dead last is one thing, but there's a huge difference, Max, between a 10-1 and a 10-3. I'm just saying, if you've been around track guys, you realize there's a big difference between those two times.
No doubt, but he can come in within 200ths of a second and also do all the other things he does.
All right.
I just want to get back to one thing earlier when you kind of snapped at me a little bit snarky. You snapped.
All right,
let's go back to AD.
I have not.
All right.
I would never snap at Molly.
Let's go back to the AD thing.
Okay.
All right. So when we asked, is AD the best big man? And I mentioned, you said, no, Joker and Embiid are ahead of him. And you said, no, that's not what I said. So you have a minute to explain to the audience.
The point is, when AD was last in the game, he was the best big.
Yeah.
My point is, we don't know if that's still true. Because there are two things that have to happen. He has to get back to at least where he was consistently. We've seen him do that here and there. Mm. And then number two, is where he was still the best? Because Embiid and Jokic have come up in the world. So to me, that question is not answerable yet. We will find out in the playoffs. Let's see what Embiid does. Let's see what Jokic does.
But you've seen
Let's
AD
see
in the playoffs.
Does. But not recently. Like, not since he got hurt.
Yeah.
Right now, we got to see him get back to where he was. And then, Molly, we got to see Embiid and Jokic. Is the standard AD set still the gold standard, or have Embiid and Jokic passed it? Let's find out.
All right.
Well, here's the thing. Defensively, I think AD brings something a little different to the table than Embiid and Jokic.
Okay. Oh, Embiid is a beast.
Embiid is a beast. I'm not saying that. But what we saw from AD last year, and then when he's right and he's healthy, it just seems like it's a different level.
By the way, Bradley Beal is on the show tomorrow. Can't wait for that. And on your radio show, the Max Kellerman show, Juju Smith-Schuster is on today. So let me give you a topic you should ask him about. Let me play producer.
And I won't snap.
Villanueva's comments. Remember Villanueva's comments on Schuster? He wasn't into his TikTok videos. Remember all that? Throwing a little hate. And then that's part of the reason he went to the Ravens to go against the Steelers. So please ask him about that situation and please report it back to me. Chris, it's been a pleasure to deal with you today.
It's been great.
All right, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. You are so difficult.